present the firewood restriction rule proposal. We thought it'd be sequentially appropriate to give a little bit of background on why that rule is being proposed at this time due to the emerald ash borer detection in South Dakota. As you know, the emerald ash borer has made some headlines. It's been spreading across the country, starting in Michigan 15, 18 years ago or so, when it was first detected there. And we've been, as a park agency, as Game Fish and Parks, we've been kind of monitoring that advancement of emerald ash borer, because in our state parks, a while back we did some surveying and we determined that 25% of our trees in our state parks are green ash trees, which are the trees that emerald ash borer attacks and kills. So we have very keen interest in making sure our parks still provide quality habitat and tree cover in there, and with 25% of our trees being green ash, we've been doing a lot of things in the last 10, 15 years to try to prepare for the advancement and the arrival of emerald ash borer, and unfortunately we kind of feared that the day would come when it was detected in our state, and about a month ago it was detected and affirmed in northern Sioux Falls there. So that put in some quarantine measures in effect. And with me today is Brenda Sievers with the Department of Agriculture, and she's going to maybe give a little bit of update on the detection, a little bit about the insect, kind of a little bit about its biology and kind of how it transports and moves and things like that, and help you a little bit understand why this firewood restriction is being proposed. So I'll turn it over to Brenda.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Commission members. I see Secretary Hepler has left for a little bit. I am Brenda Sievers. I am the Plant Industry Program Manager for the South Dakota Department of Agriculture. And so one of the programs underneath my umbrella is the quarantine program. And I'll get into that in a bit, but John Ball was unable to be here today. He had other commitments. He is our SDSU, not only the extension specialist for forestry, but he is also serves in the role as our Department of Ag Forest Health Specialist. So he serves as a dual role for that. So just this map here shows the detection levels across the United States. Currently, emerald ash borer is found in 32 states. Actually, we're the 33rd state. And so the little red dots across the states there, that's where we've actually had detections of emerald ash borer across the United States. So one of the things, just to give you a little bit of history on the emerald ash borer, it was discovered in Sioux Falls, in the northern part of Sioux Falls, and it was actually an arborist that was doing some trimming of trees that noticed the larvae underneath the bark when they dropped some of the trimmings down. They noticed that this larvae was there, and so we did have to do some official detection work before we could release that information. So the infestation, unfortunately, the sad part of this whole thing is emerald ash borer is not going to disseminate between one type of ash or the other. It will spread across the state. There's nothing much we can do about it. The important thing to remember, and we've got a thing here in just a bit that will show you one of the reasons why the quarantine will take effect, or why we push for the quarantine, is to prevent it from moving across the entire state in just a few short years. It could take up to 20 years to get spread across the entire state, and once it does, it will infest all of our ash trees unless they are treated. So every ash tree, as I said, will eventually be killed unless it's treated with insecticides. I know John has done a lot of work, and we've had public forum meetings in Sioux Falls to show the difference, what can be done with your ash trees. And as John says, the treatments that are done, the typical homeowner cannot do those, especially on a tree that's anything bigger than about a 6 to 8 inch size. So it will affect all the ash species, the black ash, the green ash, and the white ash, though it does not attack the mountain ash. That one actually is a blooming ash. This is a picture of what the larvae, what they feed underneath the bark. It does have this serpentine type of thing. It does take about 4 years of repeated attacks before it will kill that tree. So anything with about 30% canopy is what John says, you can actually treat that tree and still save it. But this is what it does look like. One of the interesting things is, as you can see, that larvae up there in the upper corner, if there is another one, if the tree is heavily enough infested, if there's another one that's going to be taking his trail, he could actually feed right through that initial larvae and kill the one that's already there. They're kind of a strange critter that way. So here is the information regarding why it's really important. Trying to spread this out over a number of years instead of having all of our ash trees affected at once. So once it is found in a state park, then according to John Ball, all the ash trees would become infested and die within that 10 years. And we're really not going to see a whole lot these first few years, especially where this infestation is at right now. It'll be about year 4 to 5, and that area is where you'll start seeing your trees really be declining. And this is one of the problems with the decline of those trees, because it comes very brittle and will fall. Unlike the cottonwood trees, for example, that have been dead there for years in the corner, this tree will actually fall within a short amount of time once it is attacked. So as we were actually at the site yesterday in Sioux Falls, the adults are flying now. We did actually find, we typically don't trap in areas where we already know we have it, but we were wanting to see what, you know, when they were starting to fly. So we did pull down a couple of our traps and noticed that we did have some adults that were in those traps. And again, they are very much, they often do not go far. A lot of times they will attack the same tree they just came out of. So it does take, again, 4 years to of repeated attacks to kill that tree. The emerald ash borer flying during the summertime, typically between Memorial Day and Labor Day. They do infest those trees from during that time, and they will attack those trees. And so one of the concerns is moving the wood from the infested trees as either logs or even as chips could possibly spread that infestation. So one of the things Sioux Falls has done is requested landowners to not trim their trees during that period, because it's almost like it is an attractant to that fresh cut for the emerald ash borer. The infested trees can then be removed between Labor Day and Memorial Day, and the wood is utilized or destroyed after that, during that time period. So the quarantine information, we do have an informational website that's available. You can go to either Department of Ag's website, and we have this as a link right there, or it's emerald-ash-borer-in-south-dakota.sd.gov, and that's where we keep all the information, not only from what John has put together through SDSU work. We've also got Ag Services information on the quarantine, and then Resource Conservation and Forestry has got information out there as well. So here's a picture of the emergency plant pest quarantine area. And one of the reasons why this, it was actually a detection that was done in Minnehaha County, but we included portions of Turner and Lincoln County, mainly because the areas where there are drop-off spots for wood are located in there. And one of the big users of this is actually in Chancellor at Poet. So that's one of the reasons why we did include that in those areas. This is a picture of the quarantine across the United States. One of the main things I guess I want to point out here is notice in the eastern part of Minnesota, the emerald ash borer has actually been quarantined there for a number of years, but we don't have any actual detections on the western side of Minnesota. So they quarantined a few counties there with the intent that it wouldn't move across the state as quick. Iowa went with the federal quarantine, and when a federal quarantine is done, they quarantine the entire state unless the state decides to do something different. They went with an entire state quarantine, and the emerald ash borer moved across the entire state in a faster time, a shorter amount of time than would have been happening, like say in Minnesota, where it's actually been detected there earlier. So we are currently working, we got a joint federal and state quarantine that we're working on. The federal quarantine has not taken effect yet, but this quarantine will regulate all the life stages of the emerald ash borer. We do have an emergency quarantine that's currently in effect. It regulates the movement of all ash materials, and we're currently working on the inspection protocols that will allow movement outside the quarantine area, including compliance agreements, because there are a number of things that are affected by this. For example, a pallet company, we even have a gentleman that is selling wood for smoking purposes to restaurants. So that was one of the things we didn't anticipate when we had this type of thing take effect. The regulated material includes, but it's not limited to, any life stage of the emerald ash borer, All ash nursery stock, there's actually nothing to mitigate the ash stock according to the federal guidelines. Ash logs and lumber, hardwood firewood, and ash chips and mulch, and then the wood packing material constructed of ash. And so we've been working on some compliance agreements with the people doing pallets, for example. And on the nursery stock, the majority of nurseries in that area have not been selling ash. We did have one large box company or box store that was selling ash trees. It's the first time we'd seen that for quite a while. But most of the nurseries, the typical type nurseries, haven't been selling ash, and it's not a recommended planting tree in Sioux Falls anymore. The regulated materials can move freely within those quarantine boundaries, and the reason for that, again, would be if you trim your trees, you could actually take it to a drop-off site that's within the quarantine area, or you could even, once they chip that, they can take it to POET as well. Inspection would be required to move those regulated materials outside that quarantine or outside those boundaries of the quarantine area. So just to give you a synopsis of what we've done so far as Department of Ag, we've held a public hearing on May 29th for the emergency quarantine. The emergency quarantine is valid for 90 days from the implementation. And after 90 days, then we have to actually go into official rulemaking procedures. We have to entirely create a section in our rules because currently there is nothing in for Emerald Ash Borer. The only thing that we currently have in our plant quarantine rules is defining the non-native plant species, which includes all parts, part seeds and plant parts of things such as Canada thistle, leafy spurge, those types of things. And then the other one that's in there is regulated plant diseases, which covers our carnal bunt, which is a disease in wheat. So we currently have nothing in our rules that could actually take place for Emerald Ash Borer. So with that, that's kind of a quick over as far as what's been taking place. Is there any questions that you have on how about quarantine?
Are there any questions? So a lot of, I noticed Sioux Falls, they're cutting a lot of them down, and it takes 4 or 5 years for them to die, from what I understand, and you said.
So what they were asking in Sioux Falls is that they not cut anything from Memorial Day until Labor Day, because unless it's for a public safety type of thing. So obviously if they have a storm that comes through and they need to do some trimming or some removal of trees, and they're still going to allow that. But that's one of the things that Sioux Falls City is requesting, because they don't want to move it around the city. We were kind of lucky that this was found very early on. Typically, it's found when you see an adult flying or if you happen to be noticing some of the D-shaped holes later. But this was found before there was adults emerging, and that's one of the reasons why Sioux Falls did implement that, requesting people to not trim their ash trees so it wouldn't produce that scent, so to speak, to attract that emerald ash borer adult.
So outside of the quarantine area, is it wise to cut ash, get rid of ash trees, or?
So what we've been saying, and John's been saying this for a number of years, if you have an ash tree that is needing to come down, take it down. What they're saying is you don't need to do treatment unless it's within 15 miles of where the detection was found. So the people that are wanting to have treatment done on their trees, like say in Rapid City, there's no reason to do that because we haven't found it there yet. So that's one of the reasons why to, you know, if it gets found in your area, then you can treat your trees or decide you want to take it down. But if you have a tree that's not in good shape, maybe take it down, or maybe you've got a small tree and it's not doing as well, maybe plant something else. So diversify, I guess, is the big thing.
There you go, Russ.
Thanks, Commissioner Olson. What is the cost per tree to treat, like an average size tree? If somebody wanted to treat it, what would it cost them?
So what we have discovered down in Sioux Falls is the arborists down there are saying anywhere from $150 to $300 a tree, depending on the size. It's an injection process that has to be done by a commercial applicator, and that has to be done every other year. So the intention is that after about 10 years, roughly 5 treatments, then you could extend that out, because your emerald ash borer will typically have reached its max stage of infestation at that point, and then you can kind of extend your treatments out. But as John says, you know, a lot of times those trees, people will get bored, maybe the house will get sold, you know, that type of thing.
everything you need to know about your ash tree. So all ash trees are pretty susceptible then, so.
All ash trees are susceptible.
Except the, which one did you say?
Mountain ash.
Mountain ash,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Al?
Thank you. Now I believe we'll have Bob Schneider come up and tell a little bit about the firewood restriction proposal. And again, just want to reiterate that you know, we've been doing a lot of things in the past decade or so to prepare for this a little bit more. And as you asked about, you know, should you cut down ash trees? And we wrestled with that as a planning team. You know, should we start taking out ash trees early? And as we inventoried our state park areas, you know, we found some areas where our diversity of trees was very good, and we found some where green ash trees were concentrated very highly. Sometimes 80-90% of the trees in certain areas of our parks were ash trees. And you know, typically as trees have been planted over the last 100 years, you know, green ash was a great tree. It's one of the best trees in South Dakota, so it was in most cases overplanted in our state parks. Probably were no exception, but pleasantly surprising, we found a lot of areas where our diversity is good, and we felt that we could continue to inject new species and diversify our tree stands so that if emerald ash borer arrives at any of our state parks, hopefully its immediate effects are not overwhelming or devastating to that park, that we can manage that, and then the park visitor will not experience a drastic loss of trees there as well. So. With that, I'll turn it over to Bob, and he'll go over the firewood restriction.
Good afternoon. Bob Schneider, the other assistant director for the Division of Parks and Recreation. John Kotelnik is up here, too, because we're going to ask that you consider two actions today. One is the proposal of a rule to put some restrictions in on firewood, but the other one is an emergency rule that if you approve that, that'll become effective immediately, whereas the proposal process takes some time, and John will explain the details of that. If you turn to page 10 of your booklet, and page 10 of your booklet is the yellow sheet. We've actually made some real minor style changes to the language in that. And I think John gave you a replacement sheet, which is actually a white sheet. There's about four words that are different in that, but we'd like to, you to refer to that, and that's the action we're going to ask you to consider today. Brenda and Al did a good job of explaining what's going on with the Emerald Ash Borer and why it's a concern, and Al said that we've invested pretty heavily over the last decade in preparing for this day. You know, we haven't planted an ash tree in over a decade in state parks. We've, as Brenda said, we've been taking sick ash trees out, those that just aren't good trees out. And we've stepped up our planting of other tree species to diversify. So we're doing the right thing, but we need time. And every year we can keep this bug out of our state park area. It gives those alternate tree species a chance to grow larger and do their job. And so you might ask, you know, so there's a quarantine in place that should handle it. Why do we have to put an administrative rule in place? The reason, a couple of reasons for it. We're taking a little bit broader brush approach with it. For one, as Brenda stated, within the quarantine area, regulated products, ash trees, can move freely. In other words, down at Sioux Falls, the Turner County and Lincoln County, you can move wood all within the quarantine areas. We've got major state park areas within that quarantine area, Palisades State Park, Big Sioux Recreation, Good Earth State Park, and Beaver Creek Nature Area, where people come in and campfires or at Good Earth, you know, we've got programming where people can bring wood in and burn. And, you know, we just soon to protect those areas as long as we can as well. So the administrative rule that we're going to talk about will do that. The other thing the quarantine doesn't do is prevent wood being brought in from out of state. What we're going to ask you to approve would prohibit people from bringing firewood, unless it's certified firewood, in from outside of South Dakota. So those are the main things that this restriction would do. It's pretty short, really, and maybe we should just quickly read it. No person may bring firewood into a state park, recreation area, lakeside use area, or nature area, or recreation trail that has been in the Emerald Ash Borer quarantine area as designated by South Dakota Department of Agriculture, or has been in a state other than South Dakota, unless that firewood has a label affixed certifying that it has been treated for Emerald Ash Borer. What that means is that there is a certification process that states can have, many states have, South Dakota doesn't right now. They don't yet, but where that wood is certified as treated for Emerald Ash Borer, and that's done through a heat treatment process, either being kiln dried or heat treated for an extended period of time, and that's, you see that in a lot of convenience stores. It's bundled up, and it'll have a certification right on it with a stamp by the state's Department of Agriculture that says this wood is Emerald Ash Borer treated and safe to travel. Through the rule, you know, we'll allow that wood into the park. If it comes from Sioux Falls, we'll allow that wood into the park if it's certified as treated for Emerald Ash Borer. The other thing that's important to recognize, and Brenda mentioned that, is that wood that comes from outside of the quarantine area within South Dakota, you know, we're not restricting that. If you live in Pierre and want to bring your wood to Oahe downstream, fine, you can do that, as long as it doesn't come from that quarantine area or out of state. So how are we going to enforce that? We're doing it at the entrance gate, and somewhat of an honor system. We're asking people, you know, we're keying in on if you see a number one license plate or a 44 license plate, for sure we're going to be talking to those people. But we're asking them, we're talking to them. And let's say somebody from Sioux Falls brings wood to Farm Island out by Pier, 200 miles away, and we say you can't bring it into the park. Are we going to say take it home? No, we're not going to do that. But what we don't want them to do is say okay and drive down the road and dump it in the ditch. That doesn't do us any good. So what we will do for those people, and what we have been doing for the last month, because we've already put these measures in place, is we'll take their wood from them. And then what we do is we put it in a steel container or else a black garbage bag or whatever. Park's got their method. And then we destroy that wood as soon as we can, usually the next day or as soon as we can. We burn that wood. Now, so that means the options people have is they can buy wood, they can find wood from outside the quarantine area, they can purchase it, or in the parks we've always and we continue to produce our own firewood, and we sell $5 a bundle. You know, we're not putting these into place to increase our firewood sales. That's hard work, and we don't make money at it, but we do it as a service, and we'll continue doing that. So with that, do you have any questions on the restriction that we're proposing, or why? Maybe we get John to talk about the process for the emergency rule.
This is John Katilnik again, the senior staff attorney. Unless you guys are tired of hearing from me, I guess maybe you want to move forward. No, I thought I would just give you a brief overview of how we got to the emergency rule, because I know it's not something that the commission deals with on a regular basis. And when I actually brought it up to the Legislative Research Council that, hey, I believe we have an emergency rule that we need to promulgate, they didn't really believe me because we just don't deal with it very often. So I thought I would just quickly give you a brief synopsis of what and how we get to this point. So in SDCL 1-26-5, it lays out specific criteria for a hurdle that we have to get over first before we can even start that process. And the biggest thing is that, that there has to be an imminent threat to the public welfare, and then the emergency rule would secure and protect the best interests of the state. So what we're talking about with this emergency rule is that it's only going to last for 90 days, and that's to get us through this season. So what you'll be seeing next from Bob as well is the proposal for the regular rulemaking process. So the rule is going to be exactly identical, but if we were just to go strictly that route without doing the emergency rule, by the time we had that rule in place, the season would be over and our ability to enforce any of this stuff would be long gone, and the damage would already be done. So that's how we get to the imminent threat part of it. So that was good enough for Legislative Research Council. Said, yep, we think you guys got meet the criteria for emergency rules. So that changes a lot of the requirements, the statutory requirements that we have as far as like public notice and things like that. So there is a public notice requirement, which we comply with. It's only a 3-day notice. We serve documents on the Legislative Research Council as well as the Interim Rules Review Committee. And that's about it. The LRC looked at it and said, yeah, we think you're good to go. We bring the rule in front of you guys. If the commission decides to adopt the rule, I take the signatures, I take it over to the Secretary of State's office, they sign it, and it's in effect the next day. So it's a really fast process, and it's good that it's a fast process because obviously we want this enforcement ability in place quickly. The only thing I guess that I ask for you guys is to build the record just a little bit to kind of determine maybe whether there is that imminent threat, and kind of have that conversation amongst yourselves, again, building that record so that it's clear that we have that need for this emergency rule. And again, just to clarify, you're going to be taking two actions. The first action is going to be on this emergency rule, and then secondly, you will be taking action on a proposal that Bob will again bring up to you, which is going to be almost an identical rule for this, but that's just to start the whole rulemaking procedure, which probably won't be finalized until September sometime, but again, too late for what we're trying to accomplish now. That's just a brief summary of the emergency rule process. I just thought it'd be beneficial to give you guys that overview since we don't deal with it very often.
Okay, Commissioner Jensen.
Well, I'm happy to help build a record, but here's my issue. I have to be on a call today at 5:00 here. Mm-hmm. And I know we're trying to address the snaring issue. So if we still have to hear from Bob on more of this rule, the next rule, could we do that in the morning? I mean, I really do have to be in this call, and then we could get to the snaring issue, or else I'll just have to excuse myself.
As John said, the other rule is identical. The regular proposal is identical to the emergency proposal, so I don't intend on repeating what I just said. I think if you approve it, it can be a fast action.
Yeah. I mean,
Let's just approve both of them.
Okay,
in your action.
Clearly there's an emergency based on the presentation.
Yes.
On the Department of Agriculture, based on everything we've just heard. So based on all that, I would move approval of both.
There you go.
An emergency and...
Emergency approval. And the longer rule.
I would second that.
Okay, seconded by Doug. Any comments or questions about it?
Commissioner Peterson.
I hate to interject. I apologize. So the document you have on page 10, or the insert on page 10, reflects the accurate changes that LRC recommended. The document on page 11, the first proposal dealing with the firewood, didn't reflect the LRC changes. We just got those last minute, so we were unable to make those changes. So maybe instead of rushing through this, it might just be better to take it up in the morning. That would be my recommendation.
Draw my motion, and we'll do it in the morning.
Okay. And that way I can get you a clean sheet, and then there's no amendments need to be made.
Okay.
Any other questions?
So should we do the emergency?
No, I think we can take both of them up tomorrow morning. No, that's absolutely fine.
All right.
If it's all right with you, Commissioner.
Okay, that'd be fine. All right. So we have a need to do the snaring at this time, do you feel?